Eloheinu melech haolam shehakol yehi bedvaro. We're siyata nishmaya, we're holding in Shlomo Melech's Mishlei, Perek Yud Ches, Pasuk Yud Beis. And write Shlomo Melech lefnei shiver yigbal libish. Before, prior to a person's downfall, to a person's destruction, what happens? A person grows arrogant. A person gets haughty, becomes a balgaiva lefnei kovod anova. And the precursor, the harbinger to kovod, to receiving true and due honor, is none other than a sense, than a healthy sense of modesty, of humility. Now the truth is, this pasuk appears in two parts in previous prakim, not too long ago. If we take a look back at Perek Tezayin pasuk Yudches, and Tezayin Yudches, we already witnessed more or less the opening part of this pasuk. And back in Perek Tezayin Yudches, Shlomo Melech related lifnei shever gon, and that before, prior to a person's downfall, will be gone, will be a sense of pride. A pejorative sense of pride, and the precursor to stumbling, to failure, is none other than arrogance, than a sense of gavas ruach, an elevated spirit. That's the beginning of a person's destruction. That's how the Mitzvot Dovid, the Rabag, and others explain that pasuk back in Perek Tezayin, that if a person becomes a balgaiva, ultimately, that will lead to what? That will lead to a person's downfall. And even the latter half of the pasuk, lefnei kavod anova, what's the precursor, the harbinger to receiving due kavod? That is a sense of modesty and humility. Turn back to Perek Tezvav, pasuk lamed gimel. And in Tezvav lamed gimel, we saw this exact terminology, lefnei kavod anova, there in the context of Yiras Hashem Musar Chachma. Lefnei kavod anova, the only time a person can have the proper level of anova is if it's predicated, it's built on Yiras Shamayim. It's got to be built on Yiras Hashem. So in the context of Yiras Hashem, you want to know, then you can get to anova. And that's why the Ramchal, Rav Moshe Chaim Lutzaru in his Masil Shasharim, after you work on Zahiris, and then you work on Zerizus, and you work on this Midah, that Midah, you get to a healthy level of Yiras Shamayim, then you can get to anova, which is at the pinnacle. That's the peak of the mountain of the Midos Tavos. That's what we see clearly from the Ramban, is in his famous Igeras Ramban, that the Si Hadarga, the highest level you could reach in terms of Midos Tavos, is anivos, is to be an anav, and that's why Moshe Rabbeinu, out of all the midos tovos, after all, we find in the beginning of Parshas Yisrael that Moshe is equated with Yisrael Amo, and Rashi cites the Chazal. What's Moshe with Yisrael Amo? Malamed that Moshe was shoko kenegad kol Yisrael, in the sense he was equal to all the Jewish people. Asks the Maral and Gevurah Hashem, what does that mean, equal? If I place the 600,000 males between 20 and 60, the 2 to 3 million people, I put him on one side of the scale and Moshe on the other side of the scale, he's going to balance them out? Of course not. It means, explains the Maral, that all the Midos Tovos, every positive character trait that is somehow personified by every individual Jew, you take every positive Midah in the world and you consolidate them all and you package it into one person, that was Moshe Rabbeinu. And that one sole individual, he encompassed therein every single positive Midah. That's when the Maharami probably goes on to explain, when it came time to getting married, where did he go? There was no Jewish girl to marry. He couldn't marry the best girl from Beis Yaakov, from all the schools. He couldn't get the number one Shidduch because he already had every Midah. And when you get married, you're looking for someone who could complement your deficiencies, your chesronos, your foibles and failings. You're looking for someone to complement you, that you can work together to unite into one cohesive single unit. Moshe Rabbeinu already had every Midah. Where can he go? He can only go Mechutz La'am, explains the Maral. He went outside of the Jewish nation to the daughters of Yisrael. And the Maral says, why did Hashem set it up that way? Because Moshe Rabbeinu was such an Anav. And to be an Anav, it's a great Midah. It's the greatest of all the Midahs of us. But Acharei Kechlos HaKol, when all is said and done, how big of an Anav can you have if you're supposed to lead the Jewish people? How humble and modest can you be? We need someone who's going to stand up and take charge and be a manik, explains the Maral. Moshe Rabbeinu needed some azus. Same way that Ibn Ezra and Rishonim say, why did Hashem orchestrate world events in his day and age that Moshe should go up in the palace of Egypt. You know why? Because Moshe was such an adam. If Moshe Rabbeinu didn't go up in the palace and see wealth, he would say, Jude, what do you need? You got a shirt on your back. You have some water. You have some bread. What else do you need? You have to take wealth? Oh, only once he experienced and tasted what wealth was. Now he had a hasaga. He had a vision, explains him, Raz Hashem had to have him grow up in the palace of the king of none other than Paro. So he would come to an awareness and appreciation of what wealth and what that's all about. So Achrei Chen Yitzhak B'chush Gadol, he'll facilitate the process of seeing to it that Klai Yisrael is going to walk out with all the wealth, with all the riches. So too, explains the Maharal, Moshe Rabbeinu is such an unhof. Why in the world would he go Michutz La'am? Because Michutz Lam, you have the meat of Azus. Moav, we know, is the worst of the worst of the Goyim. Rav Menachem Eder Mishklov writes, Moav is spelled Mem Vav Aleph Veis Gematria 49, because they corresponded, he says, to the 49th level of Tumah. Moshe went to the worst of the worst, but what do you get from the worst of the worst? Azus. Azus is a sense of boldness and brazenness, to see all they saw, to witness all they witnessed, and still to deny the existence of God. To have Avram Avinu saved their ancestor Lot, Lot's daughter, Moav, Me'avi, and to not show a karsatov, no expression of gratitude, when they came by the land of Moav, that's azus, that's brazenness, that's audacity, that's chutzpah. A leader needs to have a bissel chutzpah. A leader needs to have a little bit of azus. Hashem orchestrated events that Moshe would have to take from a daughter of Moav specifically, bring that midah into the fold, and then channel it and direct it to use it accompanying his midas anova to be the greatest monarch. That's why the Chiddush Yerim explains, David HaMelech is the ultimate leader. David HaMelech is David Melech Yisrael. And how do you see his mission? It's certainly alluded to already in the context of his name. Brachas Tav Zayin Amrbeiz Amrbeiochan Menela Deshma Garim. Your name highlights your destiny, your fate. Explains the Chiddush Yerim. Take a look at David. What is David? It starts with Dalet. Dalet is spelled Dalet Lav, Dalet Lamed Tav, which is Dalus, lowliness and humility. David is first and foremost Dalus. That's why it's Gimel Dalet. Gimel Dalet, the Gemara says in Shabbos, Kav Dalet Aban Aleph. And Medrash Osir, Rav Akiva, Gimel Dalet go together because it's Gomel Dalet. Gimel is Gomel. Alright, Gomel. You ever wonder why a camel is the Gimel? Gimel Gomel explains the Rokeach. Notice Parshas Chayasara. 2 weeks from now, we're heading into Chayasara. Avraham Avinu sends Eliezer to find a wife for his son Yitzchak. And what do we find throughout the Parsha? Gemolim. He took camels. And they were riding on Gemolim. And Rivka comes back on a Gemol. My Nafka Mina, who cares? And why so much about Gemolim? To let us know. Hashem is telling us through the pages of his Torah that you know what Avram really instructed Eliezer to do? Eliezer, I'm giving you Gemolim, and you're going to ride on Gemolim, and you're going to find the girl who's going to give your Gemolim to drink, and you're going to bring her back on Gemolim. Because what am I looking for? Gomel Chesed, Gomel Chesed, Gomel Chesed, Gemilas Chesodim. And if you think about it, what's a camel? A camel is the ultimate personification of Gemilas Chesodim. You could go in the desert, and you don't have to give the camel anything. You don't have to give it to drink, you don't have to, and it's there to take you on its back throughout the dry arid desert where no other animal wants to go. And he's going to take you when he doesn't need to drink that much. He's going to store it in his humps. That's a gomel. It's ultimately always gomel chesed. That the Rokeach says is the constant reiteration. And the mention of gemolim in that parsha, that's what Eliezer was to have ingrained in his psyche, in his mind. Look for gomel chesed. That's why gimel dalim go together in the alapes. It's gomel dalim. The job of life is to be gomel dalim, to sustain, to bestow chesed and acts of loving kindness onto the hapless, less fortunate individuals amongst us. Gomel dalim, that's dalim. Dalus is lowliness. David says, "Anit olas v'loish." He didn't even call himself human. He says, "I'm lower than human." And Dalet is Dalus. Abod writes a Chiddush Yerim, to be a melech, you have to have asus. What's the most proud letter? The letter that stands fully erect. And what's that? The Vav. No curves in the Vav. It stands fully upright. Writes the Chiddush Yerim, that's the Vav. It's called the Os Zekufa. David in the middle, in your heart of hearts, you have to be a melech. That means what? You have to be a gavur at times. You have to display asus. Asus the Kedusha. You got to stand up tall and straight. Not like the Anav, humbled and bowing. That's David, the Vav in the middle. But the last one think that David had that Vav and had that Gaiva take over him. No, the end of David is also Dalus. He's Dalud Vidalud. He's Dalus Vidalus. Chiddush Yerim says in the beginning of David, he's all about Dalus, humility and loneliness. The end of David is Nochmal, again, all about Dalet, Dalet's butt in the middle. He's got to have a little oven. Who's the arch nemesis? Who's the rival of David in the future? Gog. Gog Umagog. Gog, the Mepharshim say, is the king of Magog. And how do you spell Gog? Gog, the Maral says, is Miloshim Gog. Why Gog? Because he doesn't look up to God. The ultimate denier of God's existence. He puts a roof over his head and he says, I have a machitza, a separation, a partition between God and myself. But as the Chiddush Arim, the Zeh Le'umaseh of David, who is Dalus V'Dalus, is Gog. What is Gog? Gimel. He says, Gomel, I'm the one who's giving out everything. I'm the one who's doing everything. Gimel's the Yosef Gaiva. He's Gaiva, he gets Vav, Hashem gives him some power. And what does he do? He turns that and channels that into even more power. He's Gaiva V'Gaiva. He's Gomel V'Gomel. That's the antithesis of David, who is Dalus V'Dalus. Gimel Vav Gimel is going to fight Dalet Vav Dalet, and of course Anivus always wins out.
What did you say about Yisro from
Moab? I never heard of that. The Maral writes in Gvuras Hashem, Yisro was coined Midjan. Midjan and Moab always teamed up together. Midjan, so the Maral says that Midjan and Moab, they were all connected. He was coined Midjan, but they were all connected to Moab. And the Maral says, we see Chazal groups those two nations together. So why did Moshe Rabbeinu have to go there? And Moshe Rabbeinu had to go to take from the meat of Azaz, Hashemokinu Eschem, Alechem Uvamayim, and had to bring that in order to make him and prepare him to be the ultimate Malik, the ultimate Melech, the ultimate leader of the Jewish people. He needed to have the meat of Azaz. Where is he going to get Azaz? Azaz, at first glance, is a negative Midah. Negative Midahs don't appear naturally in Klal Yisrael. Mela, he had to bring it from the outside, bring it into the confines of the Jewish ranks, and then he would go ahead and channel the Tov.
Did you say once with Pinchas has a connection to Yosef?
There is a connection to Yosef. Ben Puti. There was another Koach, Ben Puti. And Ben Puti says Shapi Pepe Yitzro. That was also Yosef. There was a connection on the other side from Yosef. So he had Kochas from Yosef. Oh no, he is connected to Yosef and to Yisro. Yeah. Pinchas was connected to both.
Okay.
Well, excuse me, what is the exact translation of Gamal besides Cam?
Gomel is Gomel, is to bestow good, to do good.
Bestow.
Right. Gomel is Ligmol, is just like Gemul is Schar Bonish. Another word for reward, compensation is Gemul. L'shalem Gemul, Gemulech is I'm going to pay up your compensation. It's to compensate, it's to bestow, to go out and give something to someone else. So that's what's called Gemilas Chasadim. Gemilas Chasadim, Gomel doesn't mean to do Chesed, it's to be, do what? To bestow, to give. To compensate with what? To compensate with chesed. That's gemilas chasadim. So that's the gamal is always giving, is always bestowing.
I always wondered what was the connection to a camel.
And there you go. So that's the camel, that's gamal, and that's gemilas chesed. And that's why the Rokeach says, we have a remez. What are we referring to in this pasuk? Lefnei, shever yigbo levish, zeu paro, writes the Rokeach, one of the gedolei rishonim. Because Paro said, "Mi Hashem Asher Eshma Bikolo," and that was the beginning of his downfall. Paro was such a bald guy. He said, "I'm Melech Mitzrayim. I'm the mightiest ruler over the world. Why should I listen to God?" And that was all at the beginning of his downfall. The Esamakis Kriyas Yamsuf. And that's the precursor to a person's downfall. Is always going to be an unhealthy sense of Gaiva. The Fnei Kavod Anava, and who was the Zelu Mazeva Paro? Right through a chaos, the Moshe, this is Moshe Venu, Vayish Moshe, Onov, Ma'od, and Parsabalosim, and Mimbar Yudbeis Gemel. He was the ultimate Onov. The ultimate Onov went up against the ultimate Balgaiva. So that first war was between Moshe when Klai Yisrael became a nation, was Moshe as the Onov, and Paro as the Balgaiva, as the Gavalev. And in the future, what's it going to be? Dovah Machisro, Mashiach, Mendovah, Dalet, Vav Dalet, against Gog, Gimel, Vav Gimel. That's going to be the ultimate Machlokes in the future. Adds the Vilna Gaon as follows. We find more than just Pashup Shat that it happens to be before a person's downfall. A person displays Gaiva before the precursor to true cover to getting honor is to be an Onov. Adds the Vilna Gaon as follows. He says, well, if we see a person suffer downfall, Mistoma, that's the Gilei Milsa that indicates to us that it must be, it was Gaba Salev, there was an unhealthy sense of haughtiness and arrogance. And therefore the downfall came onto him. See, he says as follows the Vilna Gaon. When Hashem wants to get someone, when Hashem wants to take revenge, so to speak, what does he do? In order to be Megadel and Mekadesh, his name in the world, First he builds up the person, and because the bigger you are, the harder you fall. First he builds you up and he says, oh, you think you're the greatest of the great, you know what? I'm going to take your natural state of gaiva, and I'm going to give you even more gaiva. And then what? And then I'm going to bring you down, and that'll bring a greater kiddushim shemayim in the world. And what's the example? Haman. What did Hashem do? Haman, you're a Amalek, you want to destroy the Jewish people. So Haman was the advisor to Achashverosh. What does Hashem do? He makes him the Mishnah LeMelech. He makes him the number two in command. And he makes him control Achashverosh. So that when we have the Nase and the story of Purim, there'll be a greater Yiskada V'Yiskadash Shmo. And this world, by seeing the ultimate downfall and the demise of Haman HaRasha. He says, that's what Hashem did to Haman. And Lomaso, in contrast, that's what he did to Mordechai. If you think about it, Mordechai, he wants to save Mordechai. He wants to give Mordechai covered. First, what does he do? First, he makes Mordechai low. He makes Mordechai low, then he gets him persecuted by Haman. Ultimately, Mordechai has to wear a sack ve'efer because of the harsh decree. He has to go into the streets donning the sackcloth and the ashes. He makes Mordechai low, and because then when he gives him the ultimate covenant, and then by Yigdal, the shame of Mordechai goes, it's so much greater when you say, look at the contrast. He was so small, and now he's so big. Haman was so big, and now he's so small. That's the seesaw effect. And that's why, when we have Yaakov and Esav, it's Kishazek comes and Nofel. What does it mean, Kishazek comes and Nofel? It's a seesaw. The way a person goes up is when the other one goes down. When the other one goes down, the other one goes up. Haman was made great. Ultimately, because of the decrees against Mordechai and his people. And when Mordechai arose, Haman now had a downfall. And that's the remez here in this pasuk. Not only that the person's a Baal Gaiva, but the Fnei Shever, before Hashem brings about a person's downfall, adds the Vilna Gaon, Yigbal Levish, who Yigbal Levish? Meaning Hashem is going to bring him up even higher. Hashem will put him on a bigger pedestal so that when I bring him down, it's going to be so much more of a Geshmak, a Kiddushim Shemayim, because the bigger you are, the harder you fall. The Fnei Kavod, before I give Mordechai Kavod, first, what are you going to see? You're going to see that he's such an anav. Here is the great Mordechai, and he goes out into the street, and he says we have to decree a fast, and we have to wear sack for Afer, and that's the anivus of a Mordechai, and that's the ultimate, as the Arizal explains, and that's the battle of Yaakov and Esav. That's why Yaakov's Gilgul was Mordechai, writes the Arizal in Sefer Gilgulim, and Esav was Nesgadil, Esav Amalek, Haman. Haman versus Mordechai was Yaakov and Esav all over again. That's what the Arizal says. Why Mordechai? Why was he so meticulous? That he can't bow down? Because Yaakov's one sin vis-a-vis Esav was when he came to Esav in the beginning of Parshas Vayishlach. What did he do? He bowed down 7 times. And because he bowed down, now he needed a tikkun. His Gilgul, the reincarnated Mordechai, the tikkun of Yaakov, would refuse to bow down. And that would be the ultimate battle. Haman versus Mordechai is Yaakov and Esav all over again. Mordechai comes out on top. As did Yaakov come home, sholem begufo b'tarosu b'mamono, and Haman met up with his downfall.
Does a Gilgul know what his tafkid is?
A Gilgul doesn't know necessarily who he's a Gilgul of, except for some people like the Arizal, like the Vilna Gaon, etc. If you're holding in Chacham HaKabbalah, but the Vilna Gaon writes in his introduction to his Parish and Sefer Yonah, that even though Hashem doesn't tell us who we're a Gilgal of, unless like the Arizal told Chaim Ital, he was able to look at him and tell him who he was a Gilgal of. We don't have Arizals today, but the Vilna Gaon says, you know that your job, what is your job to be Mesakein? The tests that Hashem sends you most frequently in life is the Giloy Milsa, is the clear indication to each and every one of us why our Neshama came back into this world. Meaning what? Everybody gets tested more or less in every category. Whether it's Taiva, whether it's Kavod, whether it's Gaiva, whether it's Kas, whether it's money. Everybody has a little bit of every single Midah. But we know that as individuals, we get tested in one or two categories more often than, and the Vilna Gaon writes, no matter how many times you overcome the Yetzer in that category, you'll see that your whole life you'll be tested in it. And he saw you and that carries you through your whole life, that's an indication that you're constantly working on it, because as long as you're alive, that means you still have to work. That means the Neshama didn't get to its ultimate tikkun. So the Vilna Gaon says, that is the main job in life is to know what your primary test is, that area that you get tested in so frequently, however you try to overcome it, the Yitzhar still comes after you. All we have to do is keep working at it and do our job, and that's an indication why our neshama had to come back into the world, and that's what we have to be masakin. The Vilna Gaon says you could get to Gan Eden, and you could have two individuals, and one worked diligently and consistently on figuring that out, and on working and overcoming that Yitzhar Hara. And that person can be higher in Gan Eden than someone who learned more Torah, did more mitzvahs, and did more tzedakah v'chesed. Because the primary gauge in life is Shvirus Hamidos, writes the Gron Eben Shlomo, and Shvirus Hamidos means, first and foremost, did you break that number one midah, the reason why I sent your neshama into the world? In other words, we're all sent into the world to learn Torah, to do mitzvahs, tzedakah v'chesed. That's the common denominator. But why did Hashem need your neshama in the world? Because your neshama now has to bring about that tikkun. So that's the main gauge, the primary yardstick is, did you work diligently on figuring that out, and on being masakin, and on working constantly and fixing that mistake?
In the past, in various shirim, you have said that Moshe is a Gilgal of Hevel, and other times you said he's a Gilgal of Noah. How could he be?
Excellent. Moshe, the Arizal writes, is Rosh Tevis Moshe Sheis Hevel. Moshe Sheis Hevel, he was a Gilgal of Hevel. Hevel reincarnated as Sheis, and then he went to Moshe Rabbeinu. The same time the Arizal says he had an Itzitz of Noah. And it's a Noach. That's why he made Noach Zosli, the Nabi Yeshaya. And Moshe says, V'mayin mecheni nami sifracha, the tikkun ha'minot, explains that reason. We have a concept of Gilgal neshamas. There's Gilgal neshama, and then there are many nitzotas. We have to understand a neshama consists primarily of five parts. Naran, Nefesh, Ruach, Neshama, the three primary parts of a Neshama. And then you have what's called Chaya and Yechida, which are attached to Kabbalistic and Yanam, which are attached to Nevuah. Goyim do not have those two parts of Chaya and Yechida, but they do have Nefesh, Ruach, and Neshama, which are responsible for the fact that we have the ability to speak connected to the Ruach. We have the ability to stand upright, which animals do not. So standing upright is unique to humans. Animals can't do that. Speaking is unique to humans. Animals can't do that. And the idea of Bechira Chavshis, Ramchal writes in Tanach Hashem, Bechira, free will, we're the only ones that have that. That's unique to Homo sapiens, to human beings, and to the exclusion of the animal kingdom. That even Goyim have. They have the ability to stand fully upright. No animal stands fully upright, right? Even chimpanzees and gorillas, they're still somewhat hunched over, because our moach, our brain is in control. That's the Rosh Rishon Leivarim. We're the only ones, the Maral says, that can stand fully upright. So the Goyim stand fully upright. They speak, they have a chiro. They have Nefesh, Ruach, Neshama. But except for Bilam, which was an exception, the Goyim don't have Chayin Yechida. And that's unique. That's why we have a Neshama Yaseira on Shabbos and Yantav. The Goyim don't have that. On the contrary, Sanhedrin 59a, a Goy Shabbos Chayvisa. A guy's not allowed to keep Shabbos. He has no connection to Shabbos. He doesn't have a Neshama Yaseira that's intertwined with the sanctity of Shabbos. So we have those five parts. In the Kabbalah, right? Each of those five parts consists of 10 basic parts, and those 10 parts spread out into limitless amounts of nitzotos, of sparks. There are many millions of sparks of the neshama. So, for example, the main Gilgal of Yaakov Avinu was Rabbi Akiva. Right? So that reason I'll say for Gilgulim in a few places. Akiva Yaakov, and it's highlighted by the very fact that Yaakov's name consists of the identical letters as Akiva. Akiva and Yaakov. Yaakov marries Rachel, the Ikar HaKeres HaBayis. Rabbi Akiva marries a Rachel. And Yaakov, you know, was missing 22 years of serving his father Yitzchak. He needed a Gilgal. His neshama needed to come back. Rabbi Akiva writes the Gemara Chagig at the bottom of 12a, served his Rabbi Nachum Mishkam Zufur 22 years. Yaakov Avinu was the Yomen HaTorah, and who was the Av of Torah Sheval Peh? That was Rabbi Akiva. Yaakov is the one that Menas Chavaleilus, who takes us through the Golus, who gives us the hope in the Golus? Rabbi Akiva. Gemara at the Anamachus, he's the one who's laughing, sees the foxes scurrying through the Holy of Holies. He says, don't worry everybody, the Gula's around the corner. That means, writes the Arizal, that the main part of the Neshama of Yaakov came back. That's a Gilgul Neshama, when we talk about Gilguli Neshamas. Then we have Nitzotzos, sparks. When the Arizal says Moshe, when we look at the name, that tells us the essence. That means Moshe is Rosh Tevis, Moshe Sheis Hevel. That means the Gilgal Neshama, means a more significant part of the Neshama, was Nisgagel from Hevel, who never had the chance to live. Hevel never had the chance to live. His Neshama had to come back. Came back as Sheis, who took over for Hevel. The whole world now comes from Sheis. And from Sheis, then you have Moshe, and Moshe's here to be Misakin that. That's what the Ramami Pano adds. Who was Moshe raised by? Basya Basparo. What type of name is Basya? Writes the Rami Pana Gagula Neshamas. Basya, or in Divrei Yomim, her name is called Bisya. Basya is Baska, the daughter of God. Why would Vasya be the daughter of God? Because writes the Rami Pano, she was a Gilgal of Chava. Chava never had the chance to raise her son Hevel. So we needed to reenact that, so to speak. So writes the Arizal, Chava came back as Vasya Baska, the daughter of God. Hence her name. Who was the daughter of God? Chava. There only was one daughter of God. God only fashioned one woman, Chava. Chava comes back as Basya Baskal, and now Moshe comes back as Moshe Sheis Hevel. It's Hevel all over again. Basya raising Moshe, Hevel being raised by Chava all over again. That's why it's a new Bria. That's why in the Nevi'im we see it's a Leda Chadasha. The world starts out and everything is supposed to come from Hevel. He's the one who understands the Yisod of a Korban. He's the one who understands Hevel, Avol, and Kilkal. What type of name is Hevel? I notice in the Torah, we never even find why Chava named him Hevel. It's amazing. Kayin kikono kanisi im Hashem. I acquired with God, we created together. Gamar needed aflamin about base. Man provides 10 parts, the woman provides 10 parts, and God provides the 10 spiritual parts. Hevel we find out, because you don't need a reason. The name says it for itself. Hevel is Hevel avolim. Can't call Hevel. Why did it occur to Hevel to bring a carbon? Why not fruit? Because Kayin says, oh, I'm around in this world. I have my fruit. I'm going to give my fruit. That's my vegetation. That's what I'm going to give to you. Hevel says, I want to give myself, writes Rami Pano. But I can't give myself because I'm not allowed to commit suicide. What does he do? He gives a living being. That's why he thought of a living being. I have to give over the thing that most resembles a human that I can bring. That's a carbon. Taking the place of the human, he gives a carbon. He says, because in this world, Hevel avolim, it's all Hevel. Hevel was an onov. Moshe Rabbeinu, the ultimate Anav, is the Gilgal of Hevel. Hevel shes Moshe. So now Moshe is going to be raised by Basya. That's the power in Yeshama. But there's a nitzotz of Noach that went into Moshe because Noach had to go ahead and he needed a tikkun. So part, a little nitzotz, a spark of Noach went into Moshe. That's why we find the Meluha Romah. It's a spark of Moshe, of Yaakov Avinu, went into Moshe as well. Yaakov was the Yamin HaTorah. Spark of his Neshama went in. But Moshe was Moshe Sheis Hevel, but he had a spark of the nitzotz, sparks, a piece, a tiny little piece of Noach to be Mesake. So there's a difference between Gilgal Neshamas and nitzotz that come back and attach themselves to the primary Neshama of an individual.
Rabbi, why is it that we need the Neshama of, Gilgal? That we have, that Rabbi Shem has many neshamas roaming around.
Excellent.
Excellent
question. God has limitless numbers of neshamas. And the idea is because in order to be in one's rightful place, remember, God created all those neshamas in their initial, pure, pristine, unstained state. Those neshamas are perfect. That's why neshama says, I don't want to go to Olam Hazeh. What happens in Olam Hazeh? In Olam Hazeh, and there's Yetzirah, there are fights, I'm going to get stained. Neshama doesn't want to get stained, doesn't want to get muddy, doesn't want to get dirty. Neshama says, I want to stay up there. Neshama says, no, you have a tafkid. I didn't create you, stop. You have a tafkid. You have to go into a person's guf. And a person's job is to do what? Is to sanctify that neshama, bring more holiness to it, learn Torah, do mitzvahs with the attachment of the guf and the neshama. But unfortunately, people make mistakes. All the main tzadik parts, Asher Yasa Tovlo Yachdash Shlomelch tells us, everybody does averus. So, you need to do what? To do tshuva. And we all have the opportunity to do tshuva. What if a person dies and they didn't do tshuva shlema for every avera? What if a person dies and they didn't do certain mitzvahs? We have 248 avarim, 365 gidim that correspond to the tiring mitzvah. 613 is the 248 and the 365. And all the mekubalim explain, because we have to sanctify all the parts of the body. What if a person went through life and you never did a mitzvah with your right hand, let's say. Let's say a person never did a mitzvah. Or let's say a person didn't have avera. And they didn't do tshuva. They didn't do a proper tshuva. Let's say they died right before a shana yom kippur aser shemei tshuva. And they forgot to do tshuva for something. And they have to be masakin it. So what's Hashem? Now the Hashem went back up. The Hashem is not pure. For an Hashem to go back, Olam Haba is pure. Olam Haba is perfection. To go back to a world of perfection, to dwell in its proper place, the neshama has to be pure and perfected. That's why neshama sometimes, it's sometimes better, the Vilna Gaon says, to go through Gehenna so you don't have to go to Gilgal. Gilgal means that part of you has to come back to this world. Sometimes it's better to go to Gehenna, which is a cleansing, purging process. There are neshama who don't even get into Gehenna. Gehenna is to make sure that the neshama is cleansed. It's the shower before you go into Gan Eden. So to speak, you have to get cleansed because the neshama can only be in Gan Eden if it's resembling its pure, pristine state. So sometimes Hashem decides, you know what, I'm going to put only a piece of that neshama needs a tikkun, a small little piece, I'll send a little small little piece back. Same with Arizal writes in the Kirtei Torah Parsha Shemini. We had the story in Muncie a number of years ago of the talking fish. Did it really happen? Did it not happen? I don't know. Did a fish talk? People say that they heard it. But the Arizal writes, and the Munkat Sherba brings it in the Sefer Devarei Torah and Madura Gimel, he writes, Meshem the Arizal, that tzaddikim sometimes will be in his goggle as fish. As fish? One of the reasons Arizal says to eat fish on Friday night is because the tzaddik was almost perfect. So Hashem says, the tzaddik, I don't want to send the tzaddik into Gan. I don't want to send the neshama's, the tzaddik's neshama back into this world because it's a painful thing to come back as Gilgal. We're not aware of it, but that neshama that we have is aware of it in that world. So to come back as a Gilgal is not a great thing. So Hashem says, what? I'm just going to send back a little piece of his neshama that still needs perfection, and it'll come back as a fish, and just the act, doesn't have to actively do anything, just the act of being caught, and then a Jew making a bracha on this fish and eating it, l'shem mitzvahs onik Shabbos, can be the final tikkun. That's why the story certainly could have been true of the talking fish, because the Arizal says, a tzaddik can sometimes come back as a fish, and then we'll make a bracha. But you can have sometimes a person, the Arizal says, a person who is a baal lashon hara, someone who goes around gossiping all throughout his or her life, comes back as what? Comes back as a bee. Nobody likes bees. A devora, dibur. Someone who's speaking all the time, diburim, buzzing all around. Buzzing all around. Hey, you know the latest buzz? You know the latest buzz? A baalas lashon hara comes back as a bee. And nobody eats bees. There's no way to be makadesh bees. You can't eat a bee. You can't. Not only that, we run away from bees, just like we run away from the. Can you imagine that baal lashon hara comes back as a bee and says, "Somebody make a bracha me." We don't. We stay away. They sting. They hurt. We stay away from bees. Hashem uses bees as what? Your enemies are going to surround you like bees. Those are baal bas lashon hara. So a person who goes around gossiping, sharing all the buzz, the only insect in the world that has dibur in its name is a devora. As a devora, dibur, constantly wants to speak. Someone who is speaking too much, gossiping too much. You know the latest buzz? Flying all over the place. Hashem says you're going to come back as a bee. And that's a painful existence. But that is still is part
tikkun,
of the tikkun.
How is that a tikkun, though?
No, because the tikkun is instead of doing something that's tzaddik, a little nitzitz comes back, a person catches the fish right away, makes a brach on it, uses it in a mitzvah, l'shem onuk Shabbos. Oh, now the neshama has its tikkun gavaldik. The bee's tikkun is the suffering of being in the bee. It's the suffering, meaning it's not a tikkun ayidei the bracha. That's why there's a famous case of the Nadvorna Shereba, who was traveling through Europe, and he was staying one place at an inn. He heard a noise outside, and he says to his gabbai, "What's the noise?" He said, "It's a dancing bear." It's a dancing bear, and there's a mice, and Nadvorna Shereba went outside, and he started speaking to the bear, and the gabbai said, "What's going on?" He says, "Because I saw on the bear, I heard the way the bear was making noise, that it wasn't the regular bear." He says, "I looked at the bear, and I saw," it's Nadvorna Shereba, "that it was a gilgal of someone," and I said, "Yankel, Arkan, you did your tikkun, it's time to go back," and the bear dropped dead on the spot. There's a mice with the Baal Shem Tov. Somebody had to come back as a horse. Why? And this is very scary. This wasn't our shiur today. But if you owe somebody money, it's very scary. If a person owes somebody money, if you're a worthy enough person, Hashem says, then if you didn't pay up that person, let's say you borrowed $100 and you die at $120 and you forgot that you owed the person $100. So Hashem says, if you're a good person, Hashem says, I'm going to have your kids pay up for you. I'm going to have your kids pay up for you. Your Yerushim will somehow pay up. Either they'll remember, or even if they don't remember, they'll give a $100 gift somehow or another, and they'll pay up. And if it's not your kids, it'll be your grandkids, some family member. Or if you're not such a tzaddik, for your children or grandchildren to pay up, sometimes Hashem says, you know what? I'm going to have something fail in the business, and this guy's going to get the thing in business. Somehow it'll orchestrate events. The person's going to get it. And if a person's not worthy of having it come about in the right derech, then a person has to come back as a gilgal. So sometimes a person can come back as, if they're worthy, they can come back as a gilgal, as a human being. Sometimes they might come back as a horse to work for this person. So I said with the Baal Shem Tov. Baal Shem Tov went to a certain town, and he told this person, Reuven, he says, "Reuven, Shimon owed you $100. Did you forgive him?" He says, "No, I have the IOU." He says, "Well, Shimon passed away, and you never forgave him." He says, "I want you to rip up the IOU." So he says, "No, I forgive him." He says, "Go get the IOU, and I want you to rip it up in front of me." And he says, "Okay, I forgive him." He says, and Baal Shem Tov looks around at his stable, at his ranch, and he says, "You didn't fully forgive him yet. Rip up the IOU." And the second he ripped it up, a horse dropped dead in his ranch. And it says because that person had to come back because he owed you. He owed you $100. So he had to do $100 worth of work to pay you up. That's why it's scary to come back. If a person's not worthy, they come back as an animal. They come back as even a domain. That's why a person, why do we find cases? And I know cases. True stories like this. We get people, a cat follows them around wherever they go. A cat, I know a case in Arkansas, a cat stayed outside a person's house not until they asked a shayla and they were told to go over to the cat and say, Harini mochalach, I forgive you. And the cat left, they never saw the cat again. You never know. At the end of the day, and that's why pay up all your debts and do tshuva beforehand. So that's where I'd like to be. It's the tsar of the Gilgal. Because we don't know about it, but that neshama knows, part of that neshama knows that it's there in the form of the
Beit. I have a follow-up question. So when one...
Well, we have a lot more psukim to go.
This is good. Yeah. When one names after...
A deceased relative
or a gadol or something. That is a mitzvah to that.
Excellent. So Chaim Kanevsky explains it's a big misconception. People think when you name a child after a parent, after a grandparent, it doesn't mean that you're doing great things for that neshama of the deceased. What you're doing practically is you're perpetuating the legacy and the memory of that person. But it's not giving that neshama an aliyah and neshama. But what people make the mistake of, it's exactly the opposite. We have halachas that you don't name after someone who died under the age of 60. Unless they died in the Holocaust, anyone who died, Hashem Shemayim, that's a whole different story. But otherwise, anyone who died under the age of 60, anyone who died in a Misa Mishuna, in a freak car accident or the like, anyone who died in a terrorist act, in a Misa Mishuna, anyone who died without children. And you have certain cases, anyone who wasn't religious, who wasn't a Shomer Shabbos. However, so what do? We can add a name. You can add a name either at the beginning or at the end. You add a name. You make a change to the name because why we makbid on these halachas? Why they brought down? So Reb Chaim Kanevsky explains because far more than what you're doing to the deceased, all you're doing is in a practical sense, which is a beautiful thing. You're keeping that person's name alive and the legacy alive, and that is a beautiful thing. But it's not doing things for the neshama, but on the contrary, you are taking kochos from that neshama and implanting those kochos. Because the name was the essence. You're implanting those kochos into the child's neshama. So if you had a Reuven who passed away, and Reuven was a grandfather, and now Reuven passed away, and you want to call this grandchild Reuven after that grandfather, so you're perpetuating practically that name Reuven, but more importantly, you're taking the midos, the teva of that Reuven, and attaching it to the neshama. It doesn't mean that this child's a Gilgal. It could be. Sometimes, you know, we do have cases of a person who dies in Mamish the next day. There might be a grandchild. Sometimes it could be Gilgal. It could be Nitzotis. That we don't know. We need our reason for that. Rav Chaim says, you see from Midrash Chazal that it absolutely takes Midos. And that's why. If you had a person who had bad Midos, who wasn't from, you don't name a grandchild, a child, after such a person. Because you don't want to take those Midos. But what can you do? I had a friend who had a grandfather who wasn't religious. And he also didn't have great Midos. So he asked a Shiloh. He had a son, and the grandfather's Hebrew name was Shlomo Zalman. So what did he do? He was told, you don't have to add a name, just name your son Shlomo Zalman. And have in mind when you name your son, you're naming your son after Shlomo Zalman Orbach. And you're also having in mind your grandfather. So when your parents ask, oh, what about my father? Oh, no problem, Shlomo Zalman. But you had in mind Shlomo Zalman Orbach. So that's a whole different story. Or anyone who's a tzaddik before son. And the Lubavitcher Rebbe never had children. You have thousands and thousands of Menachem Mendels walking around. Because anyone who was a tzaddik meforsam, anyone who was a tzaddik, you have so many Chazon Ish, you have many Avraham Yishayas. Anyone who was a known tzaddik, not only are you allowed to, but you should name after tzaddikim, tzidkanios, people in Tanakh, etc. Because you're taking the Medrashim gives an example. Anyone you name Avram, you're taking a piece. Doesn't mean a piece of Avram's neshama, but you're taking those midos of Gnilas HaSadim and attaching it to this neshama. Anyone who's called Yitzhak, Avoda, anyone who's called Yosef, the Koach of Tzidkus, and or the Koach of Yosef was the Mashbir. You find a lot of rich Yosefs out there. Part of the idea was Yosef was the one who made Mitzrayim wealthy. So you're taking a piece of that meat and you're putting it into the child. That's why you have to be careful when it comes to naming. Then if you're going to name after any of those above mentioned cases, then you add a name at the beginning or at the end, you change it somehow. The Arizal already told us, Talmud Rechaim Yitzhak, and that already from his day and age, from the 1500s, everybody that will be here until the days of Mashiach,
has some type of Gilgal of a previous neshama that was once here. That's why. Why do we have a concept of deja vu? Mm-hmm. Where does it come from? How many times do you have deja vu? Wait a second. Wasn't I here? Didn't I have? Because part of your neshama experienced it before. You have stories that are recorded. You can read Brian Weiss, where people went under hypnosis. There are people went into past lives, and they have people can have nightmares of the Holocaust because their neshama was there. It's part of deja vu. Everybody today has part of a neshama that was here in this world before.
So I don't understand the connection now, because you said the time that we have the 11 months, that's like having the shower, so that we can be ready to go into.
For those people who need, if the neshama, if you didn't do tshuva shlema down here in this world, the neshama can't go to its final resting place in Gan Eden until it first traverses Gehenim and undergoes that spiritual purging and that crucible, that process of cleansing.
That process, then you are clear. Then you're clear. So why?
And that's what I'm saying. Because there are certain averos. Okay, now a tzaddik, Hashem doesn't want a tzaddik to have to go through Gehenim. So it's less painful for the neshama of a tzaddik to have just a piece of the neshama come back as a fish, to have someone catch the fish. It doesn't undergo pain. It doesn't need Gehenim. In certain cases, it doesn't need Gehenim. If Shem says to the tzaddik doesn't need, in other words, you can have a case, first of all, Gehenim is for cleansing. So let's say a tzaddik didn't do as much as he should have done. If a person didn't do any averus, but they didn't do as much, and then Hashem just has to send a piece of the neshama back to finish up the tikkun process, but it doesn't need cleansing because he didn't have any stains. Or any stains that he had, he did tshuva for already.
So it doesn't matter. Everybody goes through the process. And then
everyone has to go through some type of process.
But everybody is going to have a gilgul. Everyone.
And not necessarily. You can have a person. You have the Gemara says, for example, in Shabbos 55b, four people never sinned. Amram, the father of Moshe, Yishai, the father of David, Binyamin, the son of Yaakov, and Kalev, the son of David. Those four people, they never sinned. They don't need Gilgal. They don't need Gehenim. They go right to Gan Eden. You have many tzaddikim. The Avram, Yitzchak, and Yaakov, those elders, they didn't have to go through Gehenim. They only, maybe like we see by the Arizal, part of a neshama came back to finish off a tikkun. But they didn't need to suffer at all. They didn't need to suffer. The real suffering is if the Iker Neshama has to come back as a Gilgal. They just needed a spark of their soul to come back for a tikkun.
And also, I just want to let you know that bees do not hurt you unless you deserve them. The one that you're talking about, probably, is the wasp.
I'm not referring to wasps or hornets. I'm referring to a bee. I'm not saying a bee is going to go out to sting you. I'm saying that we stay away from bees. And we stay away from bees. Why? That's a Baal Lashon Hara. We stay away from bees. They're treif. You can't eat a bee.
I'm saying,
in the end of the day, because every creature has something good. Every single thing in this world has something good and has something bad. There's no creature in the world that can't give you something good. Every single thing in this world has good and bad. Even mosquitoes, but he had the potential. Everything has a potential. People wonder mosquitoes, right? Nobody can stand mosquitoes. We don't get anything better. It's not true. There's a Gemara in Shabbos, Daf Ayin Zayin Amud Beis, that says we don't have the techniques today, but there's a way to crush up, a yitosh, to crush up gnats and mosquitoes to cure certain ailments. Same way, we have medicine today, but again, there was a safer refuos that Chizkiyahu HaMelech had. The Gemara says in Brachos Daf Yud Amud Beis, he was Gonez the Sefer Refuah. So why? There was a book that told us how to cure every single ailment in the world. So why did he bury it? Because people stopped relying on Hashem. There is ingrained in the Bria, there's a cure for cancer, a cure for leukemia, a cure for every single disease in the world is somewhere here in this world. And somewhere here. But Hashem doesn't give every generation the ability to find the right mixtures, the right concoctions, unless we're Zocha. Everything is here. Whether it's the weeds, the grasses, the different elements, every cure is here. There was a Sefer Refuos which told us how to use the world to cure every single ailment. And Chizkiyahu HaMelech had it, and he hid it. He was Gonis, and the Chachamim praised him for hiding it. Because people stopped davening to Hashem, because they just said, open the book, and that's it. Go to doctors and that's it. You know, the stipler said, if you're a tzaddik and you have an amazing level of bitachon, you don't have to ever go to a doctor. So people came to the stipler and they said, that's it, I don't want to go to a doctor. He's sick, I don't want to go to, I want to have bitachon. The stipler said, you're mechuyif to go to a doctor. Rabbi, Rabbi, why? Because you're fooling yourself into thinking you have more bitachon than you really do. Yeah. Stipler said, we have to go to doctors. But the stipler
Didn't necessarily have to go to doctors. And the end of the day, but we have it. So he was going, he's the safer force. The Gemara says in Shammah 77b that you could crush up a mosquito if you know how to do it and what to take out of it, and it cures certain ailments. Everything in the world has something good, has something bad. Again, Bali Bechira can misuse it, but everything in the world has something good, something bad.
But when you said about the tzaddik being a fish, I always thought that with Gilgul, if you're an animal, any sort of animal, that is a lower realm that if you come back to.
Exactly. It is a lower realm, that Rizal says. We have Domim Tzenech Chai Medaber. If you're Zocha, then the Neshama comes back as a Medaber. If you're not, it comes back as a Chai. If you're not, as a Tzenech. So that Rizal explains, because the Tzaddik's Neshama is not Nisgalga as a fish. Because the Tzaddik, why is he coming back as a fish? As Ms. Ramitz asked, in the end of the day, if he needs a tikkun, let him go through Gehenna. Answer is, he didn't do Averis. Whatever Averis the Tzaddik did, he already did Tshuva. And he did Tshuva Me'alva, and he took all his Averis and he made them Zechuyas. Eloah, he needs to fix something. Yaakovinu was a Tzaddik. Yaakov didn't have to go through Gehenna. Yaakov's the highest places. He's Tachas Kisei HaKoved. So why does that reason I'll say some piece had to come back? Because he was missing for his full-fledged Shlemus HaNeshama, he was missing those 22 years. That he was absent from serving his father Yitzchak. So a piece of Yaakov has to go back and now into Rabbi Akiva. One small piece. That's not causing him pain.
I thought Yosef was talking for that.
Again, that was the Hascholas HaTikun. Yosef being absent from him for 22 years was the beginning of the Tikun. But if you're the greater Neshama you are, the greater Hashlama you need to be. Moshe Rabbeinu got punished for hitting the rock instead of speaking to it, and he couldn't fulfill his lifelong dream of going into Eretz Yisrael. If you or I, the Mefarshim explained, would do what Moshe Rabbeinu did, we wouldn't be punished at all. It was only an Aveira because his neshama was so great that on that amazing level, Hashem is medaktik with the tzaddikim kechot asayro, amar nivamus kechof halef. So on that level, he did a sin that for us wouldn't be considered a sin. There were cases of Hasidim, they used to go follow Rabbi Elimelech when he would do tashlich. When Rabbi Elimelech and his brother Rav Zusha would go do Tashlech, Chassidim would follow. They say, why are you following? Because they would shake out the Averis from their pockets and throw them into the fish. They said, we want to catch them because the Averis of the Rabbi Elimelech would be mitzvahs by us. We'll take his Averis. They'll be mitzvahs by us. And Moshe Rabbeinu, it wouldn't even be a sin, but on his madriga it was a sin. So it means that the tzaddik's not suffering. When that piece of the tzaddik's neshama comes back as a fish, it's not suffering. It's just there needs an extra tikkun, one extra tikkun to get it to where it's supposed to be, and that tikkun is sufficient by catching the fish and using it for Onik Shabbos, making a bracha on it.
Who's the Gilgul of Moshe?
I was a Gilgul of Moshe. So again,
the
Arizal writes in Sefer Gugulam that part of Moshe came back. Again, it doesn't mean as a punishment. A part of Nitzutz coming back sometimes, same the Meloha Rome writes, Moshe Rabbeinu, a piece of Yaakov went into Moshe. Not because that piece needed to be Masakim, but because Yaakov was the Amar HaTorah. For Moshe to give us the Torah, he needed that piece of Yaakov assisting him. So too, Moshe Rabbeinu now was Nisgalgal as Shlomo. Not because Moshe Rabbeinu was perfection. At 120, that was a perfect Neshama. That was why he didn't have to die. She said, Yaakovinu Lomais, Moshe Rabbeinu, Hashem took away his Neshama. And then Hashem said, I don't want to go. I'd rather be here. There was a fight. The Neshama said, I'd rather be in the perfected state of Moshe, when 120 was Lo Chasein of Lo Naslecha, rather than going back up to Gan Eden. Hashem said, no, Moshe, I plead, let your Neshama go. And Moshe Rabbeinu, in order for Shlomo to do his job, he needed that help, that assistance of having a spark of Moshe's neshama. That's what Arizal says. Shlomo is the letters Limoshe. His job is to continue what Moshe started. Moshe gave us a Mishkan, which is the Bayit Zmani, the temporary abode for God. Shlomo would build the Beis HaMikdash, which is the permanent abode. Moshe was raised by Basia. Shlomo therefore thought he has to marry a Basia. That was a mistake. Shlomo, though, where did it come from? He thought that he is the Hashlomo, and that's why he needed a piece of Moshe in him, was to bring him to perfection. His mistake was that he made mistakes.
Rabbi, with reference to the 11 months of Gehenna, yes, which people go through, like, to purify the soul,
yes,
is that why we say Kaddish?
Yes, that is the reason
and
we say Kaddish, because Kaddish helps.
We say Kaddish, people say Kaddish for Tzaddikim also.
Yes.
Supposedly you said Tzaddikim don't have to go through the...
That's right. We believe a real Tzaddik doesn't have to go through it, but we say Kaddish for everyone.
And because first of all, we don't want to make a low pluck. We don't know Hashem's cheshbonus. We could have people we think are tzaddikim, they might not be tzaddikim. People we think are not tzaddikim, they could be tzaddikim. So we have a low pluck. It says you say it for everyone. That's why there's a shayim on the poskim. What if you know that your parent, chas v'shalom, was a Rosh Marusha? Maybe you should say kaddish for 12 months. That's a shayim on the poskim. So because really, a Rosh has to go through 12 months. So maybe you should say it for 12 months. The poskim talk about it if you're even allowed to do so. Because we generally say low pluck. We treat everyone like 11 months. But even if the tzaddik is not going through Gehenna, which we believe the tzaddik doesn't need Gehenna, it's still doing big things for the neshama. The kaddish does special things to ease the pain of Gehenna. But it also does special things, stamazoi, for the aliyah and neshama, just like davening for the yomot, kaddish, and doing mitzvahs, etc. So it's still a good thing to say kaddish no matter what. It's just that we see from Chazal and Avos Dor Nosso with Rabbi Akiva that it helps especially for Gehenna. So too, Hametz Chaim used to say, Chazal tell us that on Shabbos, all the neshamas rest from Gehenna. No matter what, even though it's 11 months, there are breaks. Every Shabbos and Yontif, there are breaks. You know how long the break is? The break is as long as you kept Shabbos down here. So someone who didn't rush out right after Shabbos, someone who kept Rabbeinu Tam, the neshama doesn't have to go back into Gehenna until after Rabbeinu Tam. Someone who kept... It all goes by how long you kept Shabbos. Chametz Chaim said, that's the break from Gehenna, is the amount of time that you kept Shabbos here, but that's the Neshama Yisera. I bet a person could do a sin on Shabbos. Shabbos Gehenna doesn't function on Shabbos. Everyone has a break on Shabbos. Okay, we have a lot of Mishlei to cover.
Is that true also, adding time before Shabbos?
Yes, absolutely. Most of it's as long as from when you added, from when you started until you stopped, that is the break, that's Shabbos. So if Damshin of a Rebbe, he doesn't have to go, but he kept Shabbos until Tuesday, etc.
Somebody wanted to.
Right, so I'm going to get after it, just we only covered one pasuk. So let's go on. Meshiv davar b'term yishmai velas hilo chlima. If a person answers before you listen, and listen, the Rishonim explain the mitzvah, as David says, doesn't stop me and listen. It means, atchalu yovin derei shoel. You have to understand, and velas hilo chlima, it's going to be foolishness for that person, it'll cause shame and humiliation. Listen before you speak, don't respond. I don't answer questions until you really understand what's going on. Writes the Vilna Gaon. What is the idea over here? Writes the Vilna Gaon as follows. He says, this is a continuation of the previous pasuk. We just said, Lefnei Chavad Anava, that what? If you want the real honor, then be an Anav. What does an Anav do? Anav doesn't answer right away. An Anav says, I'm ready to listen what everybody else has to say. We just got through saying earlier that David was an incredible Anav. He's one of the greatest, most humble people that ever lived. Dalas v'dalas. Ani talas v'loish. And David is the one who tells us, where in Tehillim, Kuf Yutes, and Posuk Tzaritzes, Mikom Olamde Hiskalti. Ezu Chochom, Mishnah Perkei Avos, Perk Dalet, Mishnah Aleph, Halomi Mikol Adam, Shenemar Mikom Olamde Hiskalti. David, who was the greatest posek in his generation. Halacha Kamosu V'chomakom, Paskin, whatever David said. He was the Melech, he was the Talmid Chacham, and still, he learned from everybody, because everybody has something to teach you. Mikom Olamde Hiskalti, he would listen before he would respond. And Mela, always listen before you respond. Otherwise, sometimes you answer and it makes no sense, and it's going to bring you foolishness and shame. Ruach, that's a continuation of the Lefnei Kavod Anova. Ruach ish yachalka machaleo v'ruach necheyam yisa'ena. The spirit of a person is going to do what? Mechalka chayim will sustain and support him in his state of sickness, in his ailment. V'ruach necheyam, but if a person has a downtrodden, a broken spirit, always worrying all the time, and always depressed, mi yisena, who can uplift him, who can sustain him, who can go on and carry him up. And this, of course, takes us back. We discussed it already a length back in Perek Yitzayin, last chapter. Perek Yitzayin, Pasuk Chavbeis. Remember, we talked about this at length. And the Pasuk of Leiv Sameach Yitiv Geha, V'ruach Necheya Tiyabesh Garm. If a person has a joyful heart, it's going to be beneficial, it's going to be a cure from all ailments. But if a person is a broken spirit, it's going to dry up and wither the bones. And we explain based on the Gra, based on the Rabag, that your emotional state has dramatic repercussions vis-a-vis your physical state. And that's why we saw it's a classic book, you have to read it, Anatomy of an Illness by Norman Cousins. And it's all about the idea how your emotions drastically can strengthen your immune system and help cure you from all diseases. He says, I remember having read 10 years or so earlier the classic book, The Stress of Life, with great clarity The author showed that adrenal exhaustion can be caused by emotional tension, such as frustration or suppressed rage. He detailed the negative effects of the negative emotions on body chemistry. The inevitable question arose in my mind, what about the positive emotions? If negative emotions produce negative chemical changes in the body, wouldn't the positive emotions produce positive chemical changes? Is it possible that love, hope, faith, laughter, confidence, and the will to live have therapeutic value? So chemical changes occur only on the downside or even on the upside, and that's what the thesis of the book is. And he develops the theme tremendously and brings many, many proofs. And we know this today, and we see it already from Chazal. Shlomo Melch taught us this way before medicine even talked about this in the 1960s, about the importance of love, the importance of laughter, and the importance of all these positive emotions. This came to us already in the 60s and 70s. We had it back in the time of Shlomo Melech. Dr. Jerome Frank of the Johns Hopkins University School of Medicine told students at the university's graduating exercises in 1975 that any treatment of an illness that does not also minister to the human spirit is grossly deficient. He cited a 1974 British study showing that the survival rate of patients with heart disease being treated in an intensive care unit was no higher than the survival rate of similar patients being treated at home. His interpretation was that the emotional strain of being surrounded by emergency electronic gadgets and atmosphere of crisis offsets any theoretical technological gain, and being surrounded by loved ones at home strengthened the person's immune system. These are studies in the 60s and 70s. Shlomach gave it to us thousands of years ago that the emotional state will have dramatic and drastic repercussions on physical well-being, and that's what we see here also in Pasuk Yedaled. And even Ezra says, what's a broken spirit? Interesting. Ibn Ezra says someone who looks around at this world and wants this, wants Hevli Olam Hazeh, and is Misatzevis Vekoesis al Hevli Olam, Kasholo Tasigay, if you live your life, why do we find kinner type of a covenant Matzinus Odom in Olam? Maral says, that's not a life. If you're living your life always looking around, I wish I had her house, her clothing, her jewelry, her car, you're always going to live in a life that's not really living. You're never going to live in the moment. You're never going to appreciate life. That's kina, taiva, motzina, sodom, and olo. And that's the Ibn Ezra's example of ruach nechei. You know what it means, a broken spirit? Even if you're not depressed, a broken spirit says, I'm not happy with my lot. I'm not happy with what God gave me. Ezu asher smech lechelko. Then you'll be happy in life. And then you're going to be fine. All right, it's the Rokeach. Rokeach says, knowing that Hashem's sustaining you, then you're going to get through life great. But if you don't believe that God is sustaining you, then nobody will be able to pick you up. Ruach ish is Hashem ish mochama, say HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Yechal kel as Adam, Hashem is the one to sustain you. And that's why you need Midas Bitachon over here. And that's the Meiri and other Rishonim saying, if you give all your support and all your faith and trust in God, that's the Ish Milchama who's going to fight your wars for you. He's going to sustain you in a time of sickness. That is going to be the one who will go ahead and get you through, and knowing it's all in the hands of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So since we're out of time, we're going to stop here, but just to close and connect it back to Gilgal, it's the same idea. And the Vilna Gaon says, what we have to know from Gilgal is, we don't have to know who we're Gilgulim of. And we have to know, even though, again, there are past life reincarnations and under hypnosis, and it's a Shiloh, and halacha and hashkafa, whether a person's allowed to go to those therapists who do past life hypnosis into past life. Some say it's a dangerous type of thing. At the shiloh, you have to ask, but at the end of the day, it's absolutely a true concept of the fact that we're gogolim today. But what does Hashem want us to do? To just focus on those tests that keep coming our way. Those trials and nisyonos achayim, it's a sign. That's where we have to be masakin, and we have to put in a concentrated effort of breaking down the meat. If a person finds that they have a temper, or that they have a taiva for money, a taiva for whatever it is, that's the main arena that your Hashem has to work in. You can't ever say, oh, I did it, I passed this test, and now it's over and done with. You have to work the rest of your life on that midah. And that's the sign of what you have to be misakin in that neshama. And the Nesivah Shalom, the Slonim Rebbe also writes in a piece in Nesivah Shalom, where he talks about the same idea that the Vilna Gaon expounds upon, and that is that a person has to put, whether it's time every day, time every week, to working in that one or two areas where you're constantly being tested, to know it's not about getting to the Hashlama right now, but being on a path where you're constantly addressing that issue and working towards bringing that issue to its final tikkun, so that the neshama won't need any Gilgal, won't need any Gehenna, and we could go right to our final resting place in Gan Eden. But I do want to mention as well, Yisurin, and we spoke about this in the past, that Yisurin, if a person suffers Yisurin in this world, then you don't need Gehenna. In other words, if a person didn't do tshuva me'ava, all the Yisurin act is a tremendous act of cleansing. And that's why Reb Tzedek HaKohen explains. The Gemara says in Brachos Daf Yud Beis Amud Beis, Kala Usa Aveiro Mezbayish Bo. And that means that if you suffer shame and humiliation, and you can't stand yourself after such an Aveiro, that's suffering the Yisuri Gehenim already in this world. Anytime somebody makes fun of you, or someone embarrasses you in public, etc., Arizal says take it as a blessing, because that means you're getting your punishment in this world, and you don't have to suffer anything in the next world. So if that's the attitude is... Yes, the suffering, the shame, humiliation, whatever we get in this world is erasing it all from the next world. So a person should welcome it and embrace it and not try and fight it. When someone came to Chaim Kineski and complained about Yisurin in a certain area, Chaim said, every human being in this world today has Yisurin. Every human being without exception has Yisurin in one form or the other. He says, if you want to run away from it, and there are cases, person can run away, whether it's denial, emotional running away, or physical running away. You can run away from Yisurin, but just to know that there's going to be another form of Yisurin. There's no such thing as going through life. You can't escape Yisurin. Some form of Yisurin will affect every single person, but it's a bracha. It's a bracha to get it in this world so we don't have to suffer anything in the next world. Amet Hashem, we should have a Mashiach Tzadkenu v'karov, and no more Yisurin or any suffering. Have a wonderful day and a wonderful week, and next week we'll have to cover double.
What are you doing Thanksgiving? You celebrate Thanksgiving?
If it's by my parents and we can go, it'll be our pleasure.